handle the truth.
Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. I'm your host, J.L. Covan. Apologies if there were some technical difficulties last week, both with drop-offs towards the end of the episode and maybe some volume issues. I didn't hear any complaints, but maybe that's just because you expect a low-quality product from me week in and week out, and boy, did I deliver last week. It is November 23rd in the year of our Lord 2020, 11:38 a.m. on the East Coast. Haven't even started work yet today. Not feeling great considering a half day or a full day, but I only have one vacation day left. They didn't allow me bereavement time for my uncle, and I took various days off this year due to, insomnia, headaches, stress, etc. I was probably only sick one or two days of my sick days. The rest were like, I cannot work today. I am too stressed. And then vacation days were really just like, I would like to watch this program, and I can't go anywhere, or boy, I'm making a lot of money on the internet not doing stand-up comedy. So, it's hard out here for a webcam girl attorney pimp. But we're here. We're queer. Get used to it. No, that wasn't a coming out story. It just rhymed. Excited to be here, guys. Another episode of the world's most miserable comedy podcast. We're coming up on a year, another year of the reboot of the Righteous Prick Podcast. So thank you to all my original listeners from years ago and my new listeners and those who've decided to join us on this really depressing, warped journey known as JL's Life in 2020. I guess some announcements. Let's start with those, and then we'll talk about some big things, some critical things, and some whatever things. It's Thanksgiving week, and I hope most of you, well, I hope all of you are doing the right thing. My mom will be having Thanksgiving alone, which will be very depressing for her, considering she lost her brother and next door neighbor of 35 years a few months ago. But, you know, that's what we're doing. Can't eat outside. If I had a palatial estate in New Jersey, I would, have already moved her in and quarantined her and kept her company, but can't do it, so we'll just be talking on the phone. Righteous Girlfriend has already bought all the Thanksgiving items. So we're just going to, watch some shows, watch some movies, eat some turkey, have some pie, and, very safe. That's what my brother will be doing. That's what my girlfriend's family will be doing. Her mom is in the words of Tony Soprano, a retirement community in South Jersey. So, we're doing the right thing, but obviously a lot of people won't be. And it's depressing because you realize what everybody's doing for Thanksgiving. It's one of those things where I now, whenever I hear somebody, whether they be friend or foe, talk about choosing liberty or freedom, I just sort of now turn them off as a serious person, because to me, if I'm wearing a mask is your William Wallace moment, if that's you screaming freedom while the king's soldiers disembowel you, you don't really have real problems, and or you don't really have any real agency or power or significance in the back of your mind. You know that you're sort of insignificant and that your life is pretty charmed relative to other people, because for this to be a public health measure when going into stores and other public places is your sort of gripe about freedom and liberty, you ain't shit. That's just it. It's just a fact. You aren't. Maybe you're a nice person. Maybe you have friends. Maybe you're a great parent or child or whatever, but you ain't shit. And most of us aren't shit, but you are in a specific way, because it's just, we're having people who are turning going to Thanksgiving into like their Alamo. And it's like, the measures to stop this from spreading are small, and the significance you're giving to your own life and decisions to have a large family meal are so overblown and sort of egotistical in an insecure way. It's really pathetic. And if you could just go to a MAGA hospital with MAGA doctors like, mentally deranged Ben Carson and whoever, the demon cum lady that Trump brought out at some point, go to that hospital. And hopefully you have MAGA nurses. And if you could all keep it separate to your own, not separate but equal, but like separate but stupid. I think that's the title for the episode right there. We got to write that down. The brain fart expert JL, separate but stupid. There you go. If we could have a separate but stupid society where, that's the MAGA section of the Cheesecake Factory. Cool. I'm going to get mine to go. And hopefully they're all breathing their stupid air on each other. We'd be fine, because we would end up a generation from now having fewer stupid people and fewer aggressively stupid people. It's not that the left doesn't have stupid people. Look at my Twitter feed all day. People commenting on my jokes. It's a cornucopia of progressive morons. But love you guys, though. Love you. Much respect. It doesn't really matter, though, because most 80% of my fans are now not seeing my content. Yes, it's the time of the week where JL complains about the algorithm on Twitter ruining his career. And apparently Jack Dorsey is not afraid of burning in hell. but if we could have a separate but stupid society where, like, you have MAGA restaurants and MAGA churches and MAGA schools and MAGA. I'm all for that. Please breathe on each other. Kill your racist grandparents. Stunt the development of your future racist and moronic TikToking grandkids. By all means, this may sound crude or cruel, but no, by all means, go have freedom. Don't let me be the one to stand in front of your MAGA freedom. But it's once you bring it into a supermarket with people who aren't stupid, who don't like Trump, who don't value small tokens of freedom over public health and well-being, that's when it becomes a problem. And a lot of those doctors and nurses that are helping you aren't fucking idiots and racists and small-minded, shallow, insecure people. They're out there helping people and risking their lives, and you can't be bothered to, and it's all connected. It's all connected in the great circle of life where, I'm only hanging out with my family. Like, we'll take the risks. I went to the gas station and, I bought a pack of gum from the guy and I went to the super, you got to go to the supermarket. And, I was walking around the neighborhood and you're just spreading your stupid germs everywhere, but you don't think you might be an asymptomatic carrier. Right. And you don't care. You're going freedom, and your freedom is, coming all over the face of some old person or some immunocompromised person that maybe has to be in a supermarket or in a hospital because they have to be, not because they choose to be, because they're libertarian warriors for freedom, but because they have to make a paycheck. And you could limit your exposure to them, and you could increase the chances that you don't pass germs by limiting. But no, we can't do that, because in this country, liberty is a suicide pact where you just don't think you're going to be the one that dies. We're a stupid country. And much like Donald Trump, I think we're a country that has over generations built wealth and power and greatness in many ways. And now we have a generation, much like Trump, who, you know, basically his father, racist sack of shit that he was actually a successful businessman and a man who built something. And Trump did what he does, what he's done with the country, and that what we're doing as a country, which is to say, I have all the money and all the weapons and I can do what I want. And we strut around like we've earned our title as the greatest country in the world, but we haven't. We're beneficiaries of hard-earned wins and strength from older generations that we are now squandering. That, and the problem is, even if 90% of the country does the right thing, the fact that 10%, which is, you know, what, 33 million people or some shit, are fucking selfish, stupid, insecure, pathetic sacks of shit, that's enough to ruin everything, but that's more than enough to ruin everything. And the sad thing is, it's not 30 million. It's like, what did he get? 74 million? It's like that many, if not more. And it's a sad thing. It's a sad thing we're dealing with. And of course, it makes me realize every day when I think about this that, oh, climate change isn't going to get cured. Like, we're going to kill the earth. And we will be in a position where we will watch countries in Africa and Southeast Asia drown and go through drought and starvation. And we will look from afar and go, isn't that sad? Well, if they were smart like my grandparents, they would have come to America. There, you know what I mean? There will be people saying that. And then once it gets here, it'll affect poor people first. And Republicans will talk about choices and personal responsibility. Like, well, if you didn't want to live in a poor neighbor in Miami, then you should have worked harder. And by the time it reaches, the elites, both left and right, but at least elites on the left talk about and care about climate change, it seems. What about when he takes a private jet? What about that podcast, man? Well, okay, I love those examples. It's like raising awareness and changing policy is the most important things we can do. One guy taking private jets, might it be wasteful? Sure. But we need a wholesale change of the global economy. And whenever somebody points that out, it's like, I guess that feels good. That's like showing like three cases of voter fraud and going, the system is rife with fraud. But we're not going to change climate change. I had a joke on Too Big to Fail, my 2012 album, recorded, I believe, in late 2011. And I talked about climate change and people who wouldn't change it. And what I found so ironic about it was that people will say things like, oh, my doctor says I need heart surgery. And people will get scared and they'll get a second opinion. And if that second opinion concurs, well, doc, go ahead. Rip open my chest and clear out my heart in a risky surgery because I got to live. And I use that as an example of like, but when 97% of all climate experts agree that we need rapid change or else we're going to be in a world of hurt for generations, people go, well, I need to see more evidence, because it was the immediacy of the problem. The joke was about the immediacy of the problem makes everybody a fucking, I'll listen to the experts, just please keep me alive. But we're in a new era now. That joke is obsolete because now we have the MAGA people, the libertarian folk, the MAGA folk, who now don't even believe what's in front of them. Now the example would be like, I told a doctor, my doctor told me I need to have heart surgery. Instead of getting a second opinion, I told the doctor, I don't believe in a heart. That's where we're at now. And if that sounds stupid, it is. So that's where we're at now. So how are we going to get people to do things regarding climate change? Even you have people who go, hey, West Virginia, you know, coal's going away. That's why you're all fucking unemployed and need Obamacare to survive, because you have no jobs and you wouldn't have health insurance if your Republican governor had his way. But how about we bring in some new clean jobs? Could we train you and bring in a new industry? And that is obviously what Democrats should do with Joe Manchin. They should be like, Joe, we need to get rid of the filibuster if we get the Senate, if we get that 51-50 tiebreaker. We're going to do everything we can for West Virginia. We are going to prioritize new industries in West Virginia, tax breaks for your state. we're going to make you the fucking hero of climate change when there's solar panel factories and wind turbine construction going on in your state. We're going to make, but I feel like a lot of West Virginians, that Republican mindset is, I don't do that. My granddaddy was a coal miner. He died. My daddy was a coal miner. He died in the mines as well. And I plan on dying in the mines next to a machine that stole my buddy's job, because that's what we do. We coal mine. I'm Republican. I approve this message. And that's where we're at now. That's what we're going to get, is people who are committed to their religion of Republican politics, despite evidence. As you know, people who listen to this podcast, I'm a man of faith. I enjoy church. I'm a Catholic. I have my doubts. I have my issues, of course, but I don't treat politicians, like Jesus Christ. They're people, and they are often flawed people. And in Donald Trump, they are horrible and flawed people. And when you treat somebody like that with divine respect, when he's not even sort of worthy of basic human respect, you get a real problem. And the hate of Democrats is now the core principle of the Republican Party. And even if you hate liberals, or you hate PC culture, or whatever the fuck you hate, when your political argument is, I hate Democrats, that's very bad and not useful in any way. So there's that. I'm concerned about what's going on in Georgia with Loeffler and Perdue, because to me, Donald Trump, and I have friends and I have people on social media who, were very upset about college campus speech. Who believe that that's a creeping menace to society is limitations on speech and over political correctness. And that's fine. There's an academic and legal argument to be made there. And certainly, important concerns there. If Ben Shapiro came, Dinesh D'Souza, who's a fucking troll and an idiot, he spoke at my high school. And I listened, and he made some good points, I thought, but it was definitely a tailored message to sort of, he wasn't coming in there with the firebrand Fox News brand of conservatism. He was coming in there with arguments against certain policies like affirmative action and stuff. And I listened, and I didn't agree, but I thought, oh, that's a thoughtful discussion, and he's making some valid points. And you move on and you get exposed to different ideas. And then, you grow up and you're like, Dinesh D'Souza is a fucking troll. But my school had him speak there. And in hindsight, I would never go, you had Dinesh D'Souza speak to these students. Now, obviously, if he came to a high school speaking the way he speaks on Twitter or Fox News, I could see a school going, well, we don't really want to have him because I don't think he communicates. First of all, he's a pardoned felon, but also we don't think he communicates in a constructive way for a high school discussion. But I have no problem that the way he presented and the way that we had him at my high school, it was, you went to the assembly, you listened, and maybe some people thought, wow, that was thoughtful, or that changed my mind. And other people go, I disagree. But it was, so when Ben Shapiro speaks at a college, and we're talking college now, which is, older, more mature people, still developing, but more mature. I certainly see a problem with college campuses canceling speeches by people, of opposing views, even if they're offensive or contrary to your values. I still see value in having that speech heard, in the theoretical, not like that I'm going to change my mind if I hear Ben Shapiro speak, but I don't know. There could be people on campus who really want to hear him speak that are conservative. Like when the New Yorker canceled their speech with Steve Bannon, that was weird because that's the New Yorker. That's like a publication. That's no longer even a school. And that was weird, even though Steve Bannon's a piece of shit. That's to clear up the fact that I can see the argument and see why, yes, robust free speech, especially on college campuses, is important. And I agree that when I see those things getting canceled, I think that's problematic. But what I never hear from the people, friend and stranger alike, who complain to their deathbed about masks and college campus speech, I never see a tweet or hear a comment about Trump gassing lawfully organized protesters, peacefully and lawfully organized protesters in front of a church, gassing them so he could do a photo op. It's a First Amendment fucking right. Isn't that kind of important, my freedom and constitutionalist people? He's trying to stage a coup. That's what it is. It's an inept coup. So we're lucky, but the president of the United States is trying to stage a coup and invalidate the votes of millions of people, mostly people who had to fight harder to get their vote in American history than other groups. That doesn't strike you as problematic for liberty and freedom in our great country? No, it's still masks and college speech that gets the most of your voice and anger. You know, and I look at the two senators in Georgia. You have Raphael Warnock, who's, you know, the pastor of Martin Luther King Jr.'s church. So I wrote this on Twitter, but it's the idea of, you know, every Republican wants to talk, oh, well, Martin Luther King wouldn't do this, and he believed in this. And then it's like, oh, here's Martin Luther King's church's new pastor. Fuck that radical. They don't make him like Martin Luther King anymore. Hey, here's the guy who's running Martin Luther King's church. He seems like a nice guy. That socialist communist N-word can go fuck himself. What about Martin Luther King? It's history repeating itself, folk, but without any self-awareness. Ossoff, John Ossoff, I hope he wins against Perdue. But here's the issue I have. Perdue and Loeffler are both like insider trading scumbags who are trying to profiteer off of COVID while not telling the truth about COVID, while just supporting the president's bullshit. So that should be gross enough. That should be disgusting enough, you would think. You would think. But you have to go and say, oh, well, these are people who don't even believe in COVID, some of their supporters. So why would they care if they were trading stocks off of COVID? Speculation. But then you get to the part where I go, but they are also very silent and sort of probably silently supportive, if not outright supportive. They may have said some things. In charge of this fucking coup that Donald Trump is trying and failing to engineer. And if you're in Georgia, where Stacey Abrams and many other activists harnessed an upset win for Joe Biden with a powerful get-out-the-vote effort, yours are the votes that Donald Trump would love to invalidate. Yours are those votes. Now, he's not bitching too much about Georgia, I don't think, because you know, he wants Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, like those are the he wants to win back those states because those would tip, you know, tip the shit in his favor, I think. But if I saw Stevie Van Sant, my new Twitter friend, the guitarist for the E Street Band with Bruce Springsteen, he tweeted something which was like, if every black person doesn't get out and vote, you're dealing with blah, blah. And he wasn't scolding black people, but he was just kind of saying, hey, you know, like this, they're trying to take your vote. And my response to that was like, in addition to that, every white, Latin, and Asian person who doesn't vote for Warnock and Ossoff is endorsing either by omission or endorse, you know, either affirmatively or via omission, a coup, an attempted coup by Donald Trump. Like, if there's no penalty for the party that sits by and watches a coup attempt, in addition to all the myriad of other problems and issues that Donald Trump presents, if there's no penalty, not only for Trump, but for the party that stands silently by or actively encourages it, then what the fuck are we? You know, we're a moral mess politically. You know, we're not doing anything about the climate. We have half the country thinking COVID's nonsense and willing to endanger the lives of their family and other people, or just arrogant enough to think, oh, it won't happen to me. And now you're watching, you're going to be okay with senators who were endorsing a coup by Donald Trump? And anybody out there who's listening, like rolling their eyes, like, it's not a coup. No, no, it is. It's just a bad one because Donald Trump is stupid and inept. But that shouldn't change. I'm going to use a blunt analogy. If I go and try to murder your child with a gun, and I'm a horrible shot and I miss 5 times and shoot myself in the foot once, do you look at that and go, well, my kid was never in any real danger. This guy doesn't even know how to shoot a gun. No, you'd go, this guy tried to murder a child. Donald Trump is trying to destroy American democracy and faith in it. He is really bad at it. But why would you excuse that? In this case, the attempt is 95% as problematic as the success of the attempt. You have a president who's trying to tear down foundational elements of our democracy. Now, I know it's not a Ben Shapiro speech at Berkeley, and it's not wearing a mask into Walmart, but I still think it's sort of important. Anyway, that was my whole way of getting into ways you can support me this holiday season. And I think we're getting to the point where I'll start talking like Sherrod Brown. But my Andrew Cuomo, by the way, got rave reviews on social media this week. It's getting stronger. So for everybody who thinks the only path to me continuing to do comedy is doing presidential impersonations, you're wrong. But speaking of that, needless to say, if you are a fan of mine, and you know, I assume the listeners of this podcast are strong and powerful fans of mine, let me give you the free ways you can support, obviously. Give me a 5-star review on iTunes for this podcast. Totally free. Go do that. Okay, this is first we go for the people with little money, the people with no money, little money, and a lot of money. So go give a 5-star review on iTunes for this podcast. Go subscribe, check out my other podcast, Making Podcasts Great Again, which is fantastic, and we're really crushing it during this lame duck session. Subscribe. Oh, big one. Please subscribe to my newsletter. You go to my revamped website, jlcomedy.com, also jlcovan.com. Either one takes you to the website. And scroll to the bottom. Check it out, first of all. I'm really proud of the new website. My web guy, who's been with me for 14 years, really did an awesome job with my guidance. He gave me exactly what I wanted. And the reviews have been rave. Scroll to the bottom of the homepage and just write in your email, okay? I don't send many of these. They will, even if my career starts taking off, these will be monthly emails at most. Unless it's like, oh my God, JL just got booked to do Real Time with Bill Maher suddenly. I may send out like, you know, because that's a big deal. But regular course of business, album announcements, tour dates, that kind of stuff, once a month. That's what you're looking at max in 2020. So please sign up for that. Because, you know, the issue with social media, whether it's Instagram or Twitter, is a lot of people don't see my stuff. Randomly, they'll see it, and then they'll be like, why haven't you posted in a while? It's like, I've posted 33 things in the last 9 days. And they're like, I haven't seen a post from you since August. And I'm like, God damn it, I hate social media. So the email list is the best way to not get bothered by me, but to find out everything, you know, anything. If I'm coming to your city, if I have a new album out, all those things you will not miss. You're guaranteed not to miss, and you're also not going to be bothered a lot. So please go sign up for that that email list. One will be going out this week regarding what I'm telling you right now. But it'd be really helpful to have that list be big. And that's the kind of thing, honestly, when you're trying to market yourself, if you can say, it's like, oh, I have 145,000 followers on social media. But, you know, if you can say to somebody also, oh, well, my email list is 10,000 people, they know that that's like almost as good, if not better, than the following, because those are the people who are getting your shit directly. But anyway, please do that. So those are the free ways, right? And if you haven't yet, please subscribe to my two YouTube channels. But if you just go to jlcomedy.com, you can handle that all there. You know, the social media contact page has all my links to shit. So, but email list and 5-star reviews. So there's your free ways to help me. Small ways to pay. Get some of my albums. I know I say this every week, but now's the time to maybe treat yourself. I can't do any Black Friday specials. I apologize. The albums are cheap, but I can't cut their price. They're just fixed on, you know, iTunes, Google, and Amazon. But buy them. Buy them all for yourself. There's 8 total albums. You know, the best Trump album by far is the second one, Fireside Crap's The Deuce. If you're a completionist, you know, get them all. But if you got to pick and choose, my 2 best stand-up albums are Keep My Enemies Closer and Thoughts and Prayers. And my best Trump album is Fireside Crap's The Deuce. And, you know, buy them. And honestly, if you've already bought them, I think I don't want to say I'm famous. I'm certainly not famous in a real way, but I'm internet known. You know, maybe it won't be so weird if you gift them to somebody. If you know somebody who's enjoyed my videos, why don't you gift them the Trump album? Or if you have a friend who's like, hey, you know, for 10 or 20 bucks, I got you this guy's album. I think you should check him out. And then we can check him out next time he's in the city. I know this sounds like begging, but like, that's really, I really want to spread, you know, obviously I make a little money, but I, you know, more importantly, I really want to get my comedy out there. So if you're feeling generous, if you had a friend who you think could like my stuff, go gift it to them this week. You know, it's a nice, and they'll, hopefully they'll enjoy it if you know their comedy tastes. But like I said, if they like the Trump impression, can't really go wrong with gifting them Fireside Craps the Deuce. If they like stand-up or they think I'm funny or you want to get them into my comedy, thoughts and prayers and or keep my enemies closer. And then obviously get them for yourself. And if you have like a streaming platform, I get it. Stream the albums. Maybe give them a nice review on iTunes. If you're that's another free thing. If you have a streaming service like Apple Music or whatever, that doesn't stop you from giving 5 stars to a few of my albums. So thank you for that. And then we get to the big money items, folks, the big ticket items. In the show notes for this episode, I will include a link to Jemmy, which is I was reached out to by this new company. That's sort of a cameo, but for a more robust content delivery system. So I am offering a few things there, voicemail messages, obviously as Trump or whatever impersonation you want. Sponsorships for this podcast, which will include not only having your if you have a product or a thing you want to get out, say, or sponsor, I will read an ad twice on this on an episode, but also will tweet out with the episode. So, you know, that reaches tens of thousands of people, even on an off tweet for my following. So that might be worth it to you. It's affordable if you're looking for a legit sponsor, if you have a book or an album or something you want to push. And then the big one, which is the most expensive, but it's the most reasonably priced for what it is I will do, you know, if you have a company or a group of friends who like my stuff or a big family gathering, it's $600. I know that sounds like a lot, but it's really not, for your own Zoom show up to 25 people. So if you have like a small office party and you want to do some entertainment, trust me, I've done probably 10 of these over the course of this year. And I've been surprised at how well I've crushed. Because I usually do about 25 minutes of stand-up, you know, 10 minutes as Trump. And I can do a lot more, but it's just for the medium, it makes sense. 10 minutes as Trump, just talking, you know, possibly roasting people at the event, which has worked very well for me. You know, gentle stuff that whoever asks for the event sends me, you know, my friend's married to a MAGA guy, or my, you know, sister dropped out of college, or, you know, my brother-in-law is you know, serial killer, whatever the facts you give me. And then, you know, 10 or 15 minutes of Q&A at the end. And I know that sounds cheesy, but I'm not doing the college Q&A. It's like, let's rap about race and gender pronouns. No, it's like ask Trump or me funny questions or real questions just about, you know, get to know your favorite internet fucking asshole comedian of the year. So, like I said, those are $600, but you know what? If you gather up a bunch of friends, or if you have a small company, or you want to do something nice for your family or friends, I can assure you, if you're at all a fan of my comedy, I crush these things. So I will put the Jemmy link in the show notes where you can get that. And if you're a really hardcore fan, I just decided to throw in signed headshots. Trust me, that's weird, but it's old school. And a lot of my, you know, they call me, I had a joke I told the Righteous Girlfriend. I said, they should call me applesauce. And I said, because apparently I'm a snack to all these 65 and older women on my YouTube channel. Waka waka. That's a no teeth food snack joke. No, but in all seriousness, I figure, hey, you know, my uncle loved his Bob Gunton headshot. And, you know, Bob Gunton is a big movie guy. But you know what? There's people out there who might like a headshot for me. I know it's weird. Trust me. I'm not like saying, I will sign a headshot for you. That's more for like if I have any of my old biddies who enjoy the old time party favors, like, you know, headshots, signed headshots. Yeah, that's so it's there. But I will include that link in the notes to this episode. You can just cut and paste it and peruse. And obviously cameo messages. And I'm telling you guys exclusively, this is not, I'm not putting this out in the public sphere until Friday, but Cameo wanted me to do a promotion for Black Friday and Cyber Monday, where the first 15 people ordering a Cameo from me on Black Friday or Cyber Monday, it's $50 off. Now I charge $150 for them. And you know, that sounds crazy, but the market has been very robust for what I do. And I've made a shit ton of money doing it. So the price seems to be appropriate. But if you're somebody who's like, if it was 100, I'd do it. first 15 cameos on Friday, Black Friday, and first 15 cameos on Cyber Monday are $100. So log in quick. I will promote that on Friday, but you know, I'm letting you guys know. So if you wanted a cameo for somebody, you know, get on that one of those 2 days. So there's your discount. Still not cheap, but you know, still 100 down from 150. And don't use the iPhone app. If you have an Apple computer, that's fine. If you have a non-iPhone computer, but the iPhone app charges an extra $10 and takes an extra $30 from me. So it's disgusting what the iPhone app does. So it's not all Apple products. You could do it on the web browser. Just don't use the Cameo app on an iPhone. That's the only place they charge you more. They charge you $10 more and they pay me $30 less. So it's just, it makes no sense for anybody to use the iPhone app. If it's the only thing you do, or if somebody does it blindly, I don't reject it. Obviously I give them the great product that I deliver, but I'm letting you know now, you know, if you want to get a Cameo for somebody for the holidays, they're going to be running some promotions with me and some ads with me in December as well. But Black Friday, Cyber Monday is the time for the Righteous Prick exclusive announcement. Not afraid of paying less in hell is, there you go, folks. Okay, there. Don't tell you I didn't ever give you anything on this free podcast. I just saved you $50 on an expensive $150 item. So I guess those are all the announcements to do. So we got that out of the way. Some really tough stuff at the end of this episode that I'd like to share. But one thing I noted that I wanted to talk about with you guys, and for old school fans of The Righteous Prick, let me tell you something. This is going to be right up your alley. The Mandalorian on Disney Plus is a fucking bad show. I said it. Come at me in my mentions, you Mandalorian bitches. No, the Righteous Girlfriend enjoys it, and she's starting to really not enjoy me commenting on it. I will tell you, we're watching season 3 of Schitt's Creek, which I was very critical of. I don't think the show is definitely not funny enough or worthy enough to have become the first comedy ever in Emmy history to like sweep all the major awards. That's ridiculous. But I did notice that midway through season 3, I looked at her and I said, "Do you notice that this is a snappier show?" They didn't hire new writers, but I think a few writers on the show started to flex and get to show their chops, because the writing and the jokes just got better midway through season 3. It was a little less friendly distraction and a little bit more classic sitcom television. And I've been working on my Eugene. Well, see, it's whenever I try to do it, I don't know what I'm saying is it's kind of this voice and it's no what I'm saying. No, I know what I trust me. Maybe you can hear it there, but I wouldn't share it if it wasn't on its way. I think I'm just sitting down and in podcast mode, so it's not coming out as well. Moira, but I'm working on the Eugene Levy. Just in time that the show's off the air, I'm going to perfect a Eugene Levy impression. And knock on wood, but yeah, he'll hopefully the JL jinx doesn't hit Eugene Levy now that I've got. Moira, that's what I'm saying. We get some honey buns for the front desk. Why would we want honey buns? I can't do her, obviously, the Catherine. What are you? I've seen some chicks on TikTok doing impressions in between single moms with big tit videos and bros lifting. Where are all these gyms where nobody's got to wear a shirt? Have you noticed that on TikTok? It's like your gym doesn't require a shirt? Okay. You know, I once joked that the most inaccurate thing in Creed was that Michael B. Jordan never Instagrammed his workout during the movie. He was just working out. I'm like, what the fuck is he doing? Where's his phone? Why isn't he chronicling this for the gram? But Eugene Levy, that's what I'm saying. I don't know if it's coming through right now, but I know it's good when I do it off podcast. So hopefully it sounds good. My favorite exchange from season 2 of that show was definitely when he said to his daughter, "Well, how about this timing?" "What do you mean?" "No, we came out at the same time." "We didn't time this." "That's what I'm saying." But there you go. There's always a weird impression that makes its way into the podcast. So a lot of arm tap. See, I don't feel like doing the Gruden right now. Sorry. You know what? In season 3 of Schitt's Creek, I saw a lot of writing talent.
That's a little too deep. It's starting to get infected with Ron Reagan Jr. And not Sherrod Brown. Anyway, this is what goes on in my head, people. This has been a real weird year. But anyway, The Mandalorian, folks. Not a good show. So Righteous Girlfriend hates that I talk shit about Schitt's Creek, but I also acknowledged that it seemed to, in episode 8 of season 3, there seemed to be a noticeable shift. You know, as a comedy savant, I noticed that it looked like the show shifted to snappier dialogue, a little more funny, and a little less focused on just pure wholesomeness and, hey guys, isn't this sweet? What? I think David is still the guy Dan Levy, who's son of Eugene Levy, who created the show. I still think he's funny, but it's a little one note. But anyway, that's just my critique. But the writing, a shift occurred in episode 8, and it continued in episode 9. And I think maybe that's why people think it improved, because it became a better comedy. So she's probably happy, Righteous Girlfriend's happy about that, because I will be potentially critiquing Schitt's Creek less, doing like director commentary while she just tries to watch and enjoy her show. But The Mandalorian, she's starting to be like, why do you even watch it with me? And I go, I don't know. It's just a tradition we had on Fridays. We watched The Boys together on Amazon, which is a fucking great show, flat out. And we're in the middle of The Crown season 4. Let me just tell you guys something. The 3 best streaming shows, okay, flat out. Narcos, The Crown, both on Netflix, and The Boys on Amazon. There you go. If you're not watching all 3 of those shows, you're not living your best life. But and different shows, each of them very different shows, but all outstanding programs. But The Mandalorian, I'll give them credit. They have not skimped on production budget. It's a beautiful looking show. It's a well shot show. They are bringing cinematic level visuals to the television screen. So I respect that. But that show sucks. I really do. I think it sucks. They're wasting my man, Pedro Pascal, also known as Latin Burt Reynolds. Amazing in Game of Thrones. I don't even think he got nominated. Should have possibly won an Emmy for his work on season 4 of Game of Thrones. Tremendous. Awesome in Narcos. He's a super talent. He's a great up-and-coming A-lister. He's an A-lister of the future if he's not already an A-lister. Though I did get a kick out of when like the Emmy nominations were announced. And, you know, I tend to agree with some of the backlash over, like, what about Latin nominees? Why are there no Latin nominees? And I remember this from my youth, where Andy Garcia played an Italian in every fucking movie until like the late 90s, when he was like, I'm actually Cuban. And I was like, what? He's Cuban? But there weren't roles. He was a good actor and he could look Italian, but there were no roles being written, quality roles. He had to like make his own roles. I think he wrote a couple movies. Maybe he was in the Mambo Kings. I forget. No, he wasn't in the Mambo Kings. I know Banderas. Oh, no. Was that Antonio Banderas and Armando Asante? I think. Anyway, the point is there weren't a lot of roles. He had to like, I think he wrote and directed some movie to give himself like a powerful Latin role. So, you know, there's issues with that in terms of representation for sure. And I'm sitting there going, exactly. What about Narcos? Like, why hasn't Narcos been nominated or won any big awards? It's one of the best shows on all of fucking TV. Pedro Pascal in several seasons of that. The Brazilian dude who played fucking Pablo Escobar, nothing, not an ounce of buzz for him for any awards. But then this writer was like, and they do this sometimes with women directors where they're like, again, no women directors. And they list like 3 women directors who could have been nominated. But by the time they get to the end of the list, they're like, and the and the director of Tyler Perry's Prayer for Booty Trap was also not nominated, and she really should have been. And it's like, well, now you're just naming women who directed, as like that weakens your case when you just throw out a laundry list. Like, stick to like the 3 that deserved it. Don't just name like 20, because by the time you get to the 20th on that list, you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? This weakens your argument. And they did it for Latin actors. They were like, what about A or B? And by the time they got to like J, it was like, and Pedro Pascal in The Mandalorian. I was like, what? He has a mask on the whole time. He sounds like he's doing voiceover, even though he's not. It sounds like voiceover. He's got a mask on the entire time. And let's be honest, the show is not a showcase of virtuoso acting. And I was like, well, don't do that.
you could have mentioned him for Narcos or Game of Thrones and had my full support. But then it just sounds like you're building a laundry list of complaints when you're like, what about Pedro Pascal for The Mandalorian? Could have nominated him. And it's like, no, you couldn't have. He has like 30 words an episode and he wears a mask for 99% of the series. And the only time it comes off is like because of a fucking plane crash. Spoiler. And Baby Yoda's turned out to be a full-on bitch this season. Baby Yoda was great. Baby Yoda was my favorite thing in season one. But I will tell you this. Swedish Chef on Muppets Now is now on, has the number one rank of characters on Disney Plus shows for me. Swedish Chef is a powerhouse on Muppets Now. An absolute powerhouse of comedy. Swedish Chef is trying to fight dudes on Muppet Now. He's trying to fight dudes. And when the Uber Eats or whoever or comes over and delivers him shit, he's just like, no tip, no tip. And I was like, look at this cheap, combative asshole. This is my favorite character on all of Disney Plus. And let's not forget about Miss Piggy. But Muppets Now is really good, folks. I'm just telling you, I loved Muppets Now. That, you talk about like a fun distraction in a stressful time, Muppets Now, people. And I rank it ahead of The Mandalorian. The Mandalorian's got all the big budget and all the Disney backing. Muppets Now better. And Swedish Chef over Baby Yoda, because Baby Yoda's been a fucking disaster in season two. I totally don't like the fact that he was eating all that woman's eggs. And then he basically, Baby Yoda, like, fucked with a spider egg, and then all the spider, like he ate a spider egg and the spiders came to attack him. And then the Mandalorian and these other Jedi motherfuckers were like, not Jedis, but you know, star, what are they called? The when they were the resistance. I don't remember. I've seen all these movies a bunch, but you know, remember what Luke Skywalker was like piloting with them in the first one? Like those dudes, they basically fucking commit genocide on this spider's family and community. And I'm like, all because Baby Yoda ate some shit that he shouldn't have. He ate a baby, and then they got mad, and the Mandalorian was like, well, let's kill them all. And I was like, Baby Yoda, you are beyond problematic. You were cute in season one, but now you're a problem. And not in the way that they talk about, like, LeBron in high school was a problem. I'm saying you are a legitimate problem, not in a cool sports sense. But The Mandalorian, I just feel like every episode is like a 35-minute like individual quest for people to come guest star on the show. And there's no overarching thread. And I love Giancarlo. I will always be a Giancarlo Esposito fan from his time as Gustavo Fring on Breaking Bad. But can we now admit that everybody's just like, can we get Gus Fring? I mean Giancarlo Esposito to play this role. He is in The Boys as a very buttoned-down, ruthless executive. And then he is a like Jedi Sith guy in The Mandalorian. And Mr. White, what do you want? It's the same guy. He's now the same guy. It's like, oh, there's Gus Fring as an evil Jedi. Oh, there's Gus Fring as a CEO of the Vought Corporation. I'm going to need to see something else now, Gus Fring. I need to see some non-Gus Fring out of Giancarlo. Let Gus Fring just be the Emmy-nominated iconic role from Breaking Bad, and let's move on and do something else. I don't need to see Gus Fring as Jedi or Sith or whatever the fuck they call it. But yeah, The Mandalorian, it's just like now they're like these 38-minute episodes that feel like isolated video game adventures where there's no common thread. And maybe I'm wrong. It there's a lot of death. Like The Mandalorian feels like it is a little bit for adults and then at the same time, like for kids, but there's like too much violence, real ass violence for me to be like, come on, 7-year-olds, let's watch The Mandalorian murder a bunch of motherfuckers. But it also doesn't feel sophisticated enough to be adult programming. Is this like 16-year-old? If I was 16, is this like, I think, you know what? Maybe I'm wrong. If I was 16, this isn't my wheelhouse. But most of the people that I see commenting on it and that are fans are not 16. So let's get over it. That's my hot old school righteous prick take. The Mandalorian is poo poo trash. Okay. And I will continue to watch it and comment on it because I'm not afraid of burning in Disney Plus hell. But The Crown is the shit, that I will tell you. And what did I recently watch? I told you about the 40-year-old version. Love that movie. Did I just start watching? I think I watched something. I watched the Challenger special. I may have told you about Netflix 4-part thing on the Challenger. I enjoyed that, but I'm a space fan. My next thing I'm going to start on my own, because you know you have to divvy up the time between joint programs and solo programs, is The Right Stuff on Disney Plus. I don't think it will compete with the Swedish Chef's star turn in Muppets Now. But I'm looking forward to The Right Stuff. Great book, great movie. Hopefully it didn't fuck up the show on Disney Plus. Thoughts and prayers. But yeah, space is just one of those things I'm fascinated by because I'm such a chicken shit. I fucking hate cross-country flights. You think I'm going to the fucking moon, bro? In more serious news, this is a really weird shift in the podcast. But my teacher, my sixth grade teacher, now has federal charges against him for child pornography and child abuse, sexual child abuse. 69 years old. That's not a joke. And great teacher. I'm just saying, like, I think I may have spoken to him months ago when the state charges came out. But the federal charges appear to be much, much worse than the state charges. And I keep thinking to myself, I'm like, what do you do with a guy like that? Like, because I'm one of those people. I was talking about this with the righteous girlfriend, and I said several months ago, early this year, it might have been late last year, but there was an article in the New York Times about a guy. There was a trial, and it was the most brutal thing I've ever read in my entire life. It really depressed me, and I thought about it a week ago. I was in church, and I prayed for this kid's soul, and for, honestly, for the guy who did it, because I'm like, I don't know what kind of evil that is, but Jesus. But he was the boyfriend, like you find in a lot of these child abuse cases. It's the single mom who is struggling, or may, you know, anything. It could be a range of things. She's a neglectful, terrible mother, all the way to she's trying to do her best and struggling. And here comes the man with the steady job that, you know, you got, like, he pays the rent. You know, it's a whole range. It doesn't mean you're a terrible mom. It might mean you're a desperate mom. But, you know, if you're a mom and it's not even the birth father, if they're abusive, obviously get away. But if you bring in an abusive step parent into the relationship, that was a choice. You know what I mean? Oh shit. Like, you need to get your child. You need to protect this child from this person that you brought into the child's life. But this article, he was 5 years old, the child, and I believe the man was convicted. I think that's what I was reading. I think it was a conviction and then pending sentencing, if I'm not mistaken. And the woman testified against him for a more lenient sentencing. But this guy was basically, this was a beautiful little 5-year-old kid that the last year of his life or so, he was spent being tortured, not tortured for like fun, but like, you're not eating tonight. And like, I'm chaining you to the bathroom door. That is a torture, but I mean, like, I'm not talking waterboarding or like burning cigarette. I'm just saying, this is a little child. Even recounting this is upsetting me, but abusive. I'm talking real hardcore physical abuse, not sexual, but like beating this kid like he's a fucking adult. Oh, and the day the kid died, man, he wasn't allowed to have dinner. I think he had put on the thing that really drove the boyfriend into a rage. If I'm not mistaken, might have been like he had put on like his mom's hat or like some clothes of his mom, and this like enraged the guy. And I don't even think this was like a trans thing. This is a fucking 4-year-old like being goofy, probably. Not that it matters, but I don't even think this was an identity thing. But the man was very upset and like beat him and told him he couldn't have dinner. And, you know, one of the incidents, this might have been the fatal incident, was the kid was rooting around the trash of the apartment because he was hungry. So you have a child living like a fucking beggar, like a homeless beggar in his own home with his mother at 5. And then the guy beat the kid to death and didn't know he was dead, but beat him to death for violating rules. And, you know, the mother, you know, I think there were child service issues. This was pre-pandemic, so it wasn't like the kid wasn't. I think they even found him in school with bruises and stuff. But that was his, you know, I'm of a mind when I hear stuff like that, that's when I get my most angry. And I said to the Righteous Girlfriend, I said, when it comes to pedophilia, of course, many people view that as the worst crime. I view killing a child as worse, and I'll tell you why. They are both A-plus on the fucking heinous scale. I genuinely believe that people who abuse children, yes, they need to be removed from society. They need to be watched maybe for the rest of their lives if they don't submit to some sort of chemical castration. But they are dangers, but I also view it in the lens of, that's like a sexual desire, it seems like. And I'm not saying it's an orientation. I'm not equating it to orientation. But when I hear about a grown man having sex with a child or jerking off to child pornography, I hear that and go, that's disgusting. And it sounds like a fucking vile illness. I don't think anybody, like other things, does anybody, I'm being serious. This is, feel free to tweet or direct message me or whatever. But like, when I hear that, I go, that's vile. And of course, I don't have kids. And I would feel maybe it would be, of course, more impactful if it happened to a child of mine, or if I could envision it happening to a child. But at the same time, I go, this person sounds very sick. And I can't have exactly the same wrath. Somebody who has sex with a child is having sex with a, like, they, that is out of my, I can't fathom that. And it's heinous, and it's of course wrong, but there's a reason they're doing it, right? And the fact is, I always say this, not every victim of abuse, of sexual child abuse, becomes a sexual predator. Of course not. But from what I've read, basically anybody who is sort of a pedophile or a child abuser in a sexual sense is somebody who was sexually abused as a child. And we mourn for them as victims, as children, as we should. But when some of those people grow up to be monsters themselves, we sort of eliminate any sense of, the sympathy should of course be with the victim first and foremost, but I do believe there is an illness in this person of not of their own creation. And I'm not, this is not me saying, so we should let them go. This is just me saying, when I react to that, and I don't look at like, oh, I hope he gets killed in prison. I don't look at it that way. I go, I hope there is healing for the victim as best can be. And I hope this person finds some sort of help and cure while doing their punishment. But I don't seek out some sort of final vengeance on those. I don't find satisfaction in that. That's me. I view it as more, this is a person who needs to be removed and they are sick. And I hope at some point they are able to heal and find health while being punished, as they should, for their crime. But I'm not one of those people who goes, oh good, the jail, like the rapist murderer in jail is going to take care of this for me. I don't have that. I have vengeance in my heart for petty things like managers who don't represent me. But, and maybe it's the Catholic Christian thing in me that just, I don't know. I don't see it through that lens of pure punishment. I see it as somebody who is deeply, deeply sick and dangerous, but sick. The way somebody who murders somebody has done a crime that they must pay for, but if they have mental illness, that's a mitigating factor to me in terms of how angry I am at them, if that makes sense. But when it came to killing a child, nobody wakes up in the morning going, I better not kill children because I desperately want to kill children, versus somebody who has to suppress some sort of divergent sexual desire. Nobody wakes up, as far as I know, going, oh man, I better kill these fucking kids. Or I better not kill kids today, but God damn it, do I want to kill kids? This was somebody who was cruel and as inhumane and evil as one can judge a person, the guy who killed this child. The way it was done, I mean, this wasn't, I pushed a kid down the stairs in a fit of momentary rage and an accident occurred, even though that's criminal, of course, as well. This was systematic torture and beating of a child just because you were angry at the child, that you were irrational and angry and did not view that child as the precious little human that he was. And not that it makes any difference, but of course, you know, the kid was fucking adorable. And I think about that when I think about the teacher from my school, my sixth grade teacher. I saw this guy as an adult around town. I'm not in his demographic, clearly. So I was never, you know, maybe I was neither in the age or gender demographic that he was preying on. Now, the school in 30 years of teaching never had so much as an inappropriate complaint against him. And I wonder, is this something that developed later in life, or was he a predator this whole time? And did something, you know, and I go, God damn it, that it's a 7-year, the stories are reporting it's a 7-year-old girl. And it made me sick to my stomach because you have to remember, of course, this girl is now traumatized to a degree that nobody ever should be. And I think to myself, would I care if this was not my teacher? If I didn't have a pre-existing framing of this man as a fun teacher and a good teacher and somebody who never made me or my friends or anybody I know uncomfortable. That doesn't excuse this. That doesn't make him any less of a monster just because I have good feelings. But I've made the point, if it makes sense, that I feel like it's a tragedy heaped on tragedy. And he is a perpetrator of a new tragedy, and he must pay a penalty for that if, in fact, he is guilty. Do I want him to go to jail and be murdered at the age of 70 by people? No. And I don't want that for anybody, even Donald Trump. No, but seriously, I don't have that in me. I don't know if it's fear of death or my Catholic upbringing and a belief in a hope of salvation and people's ability to change. It's like when anybody kind of pithily says, oh, so if Hitler had confessed on his deathbed, he just gets to go to heaven. And I've said this before on the podcast. I go, well, no, it's not about recitation of words. The idea behind Catholicism and Christianity when believed and practiced, I believe to its real roots is God can forgive anybody. It's in his power. This may sound like mumbo jumbo to you, and I respect that. I understand why this might not sound sensible. But if God can forgive you, if he has that awesome power to forgive, to redeem, to give everlasting life, who are we to judge? We don't have that power. Who are we to judge how that power is dispensed when that power is so awesome and of such a deep forgiveness? The only thing we can do is try to replicate that forgiveness in our own life. That's where turn the other cheek comes from. That's where stories like the prodigal son come from, where it's like the rejoice that somebody has found God at any point, has found forgiveness, has found redemption, has found a right path to make themselves better at any point, because the reward is so great for that, that we should always rejoice. And it's the idea, you know, the prodigal son, for those of you who don't know the even though House of Pain references it, and just like the prodigal son, I've returned. Anyone stepping to me, you get burned. It's one of my favorite stories because you have the one son who's dutiful, always does the right thing, and he doesn't understand why the father is throwing a feast for the son who took the money, ran with whores, spent all the money, was immoral, was wasteful, neglected the family. But the son comes back and seeks genuine forgiveness and acknowledges his wrongs. The idea is not that it's a recitation of words. So whenever the Hitler example comes up, like if you'd done it, no, it's about a spiritual growth and a change in the soul, not a transactional, I'm saying the oath, you know, in front of a court reporter. It's a deeper, you know, so the point being, I always kind of have to keep that open. That's just the way I believe. And that's why when I see somebody, I just always look at sexual abuse like that of a child as something just so despicable, but sick, if that makes sense. Whereas the murder of the child affected me so much more because I go, I was hit as a kid, but if I have kids, I'm not going to beat them. And I'm certainly not going to beat them to death. You can't beat your kid to death if you don't beat them. But this guy might have come from a rough upbringing, but there's no excuse. There's no, I cannot appreciate. Maybe that's how other people look at child sex abuse as a oh, how can you do, like, I can't fathom that. For me, it's, I can't fathom doing it. I can't fathom experiencing it, but I can fathom mental illness and sickness and pain that somehow brought that about. What I can't is like that. Anyway, this is a long way of, my point is I've tried to separate myself from the incident and say, would I have this sympathy or this gnawing feeling inside if I didn't know this man, if I didn't have a good experience with this person, while acknowledging that he needs, if he has done it, he needs to pay a maximum price within the law. He needs to hopefully get help and treatment, and so that he is never a danger again. And that, but I fear the worst, and I don't like that penalty of, you know, the jailhouse vengeance. And I think of that as somebody who, maybe this teacher, maybe I'm wrong, but my guess is if he did all this stuff, that there is something in his past that he couldn't outrun and couldn't change. And I can't help but feel sympathy all around. First and foremost for the victim, that is, you know, and what I would say is, hypothetically, this sad victim of this crime, and I once dated somebody who had said that they were violently abused as a child. And when you have something like that happen, it's disgusting, it's tragic. But if this 7-year-old girl, hypothetically, grows into a woman and she seeks therapy and does whatever, but one day she's teaching a class or she's babysitting a child and she crosses a line because of her stunted sexual growth and her demons inside her that have, you know, warped her in a harmful way, we won't have any more sympathy for her. We will look at her and say, throw this bitch in jail. This bitch raped a kid or sexually abused a kid or took advantage of her position as a babysitter or a teacher. And we won't be wrong to impose penalties on her. But we will also, I think, forget that her criminality was potentially born of criminality that she couldn't prevent, that she was in no power to prevent. And that may not happen. That may not happen, of course. And we hope for that. And we hope the person can live, when she grows older, can live a healthy, fruitful life as much as she can, and has loving people around her and can be protected from here on out. But if she goes awry, the sympathy will not be there for her. And that's what I wonder about my teacher. Has he always been a monster? You know, because we see things like Jerry Sandusky. Now, I'm going to say, now, if that's an example you're thinking of, that's an example where I'll admit, I don't think, I don't have the same sympathy there. I think he is probably somebody who was abused, and I think we need to keep that in mind. But at the same time, setting up charity organizations and for vulnerable children, like, he was as much of a premeditated predator as one could be when it comes to this stuff. But I would still say, what happened in his past? He's in jail. I'm fine with him in jail. Like, this is not me saying free Jerry. This is just me saying he was probably abused, whether it be by a priest or a relative or a stranger. I'm guessing that Jerry Sandusky was abused as a child. And it doesn't excuse anything he'd done, but it tempers my what would normally be full-throated rage. And that's why I said, you say a prayer in my world for the guy who killed the kid, as hard as it can be, because you say, whatever demons you have, whatever evil you have, whatever kind of monster you are as a person, I hope for everybody's sake, including your own, you find a way to get rid of it and to cure it and to find something better in your life. But it will never change the fact that what you did was just one of the worst, most despicable fucking things I've ever fucking read. And it upsets me to this day. But I don't know. I'm sorry. I need, you know, for all that promotion and joking and impressions, I really, I wanted to talk that out. So thank you for listening to that, because it's weird. I really liked that teacher. He was the teacher everybody wanted to have. And I guess these stories always end up that way. It's never like, nobody liked Mr. So-and-so. He was a creep. It's always like, no, he was fun. He talked sports. And that's the thing. If all this time he was into seven-year-old girls, well, then I was never going to be in danger. So I would never see danger, but neither did my classmates, as far as I know. Like I said, 30 years, not a complaint. It's not like there was some whisper campaign or some rumors. There was nothing. And I don't know. I hate to say it. I want to know more, not in terms of, I know what he did. It's, you know, you're talking 1500 images. Just so I'm not presenting an unfair glowing perception of this guy, 1500 images on his device of this person. Whether he was having this person do things, I don't know that he was engaging with the person, but whatever the case, person, fucking child, excuse me, person makes it sound like it could be any child, a fucking second grader, basically. God, it's fucking horrible. And I get mad thinking about the conduct when I separate it from the person, but then I think of the person and I even if it was a generic person, but let alone somebody I know and had respect for and liked, and somebody who, as of, you know, 5 years ago was commenting on jokes I posted on Facebook, had kids. You can't fathom it. And I know there's people out there, and I don't begrudge you this feeling. It's not my feeling, but if you go, fuck that guy, throw away, lock away the key, whatever happens, happens. It's just, that's not me. I save my wrath for bad Trump impersonators and people who are stupid on social media. That's who I wish the death penalty on. Okay. I'm a very warped person, but yeah, it's unfortunate all around. And, you know, I pray for the victim and I pray for the perpetrator as well. I know we have a lot of Christians in this country who practice what I call, you know, Old Testament Trump Christianity, which is you like the wrath of the Old Testament, the judgment of the Old Testament, and you reject the strong and demanding lessons of Jesus in the New Testament, where forgiveness is not easy. And like I said, I'm anti-death penalty because I just don't believe in it. I also don't begrudge people their own feelings when it comes to that, but that's not me. And it sorry sounds weird to hear you. Maybe this is why I get all my rage out in comedy related things, because it's safer that way, because comedy at the end of the day is trivial. It matters to me. It's important to me as an art, but it's trivial. Life and death, abuse, pain, lifelong trauma. These are real things. And these are deeper, more hurtful things. And I think I don't have the stomach to be full of vengeance when it comes to life and death issues. I try to be forgiving or more thoughtful, and I don't expect other people to have that, but that's, maybe I'm just getting older. I don't have as much rage in me or something, but I just feel sadness now when I think of things like this. I don't feel as much anger. And yes, if you're out there and you're a parent, when personal, if somebody killed a member of my family, I don't want the state conducting themselves the way I would want to conduct myself. And maybe I wouldn't. Maybe I'd just be too sad to feel rage. But I don't know. And then in another sad story from this week, I had a friend who I had a very deep falling out with, not of my own making. I was not the perpetrator of the wrong. And I hadn't communicated with this person many years, and they were a very close friend of mine. And I found out through the grapevine, through the high school grapevine, that their wife had passed away. And this person has two kids, age 5 and 2. And I was so sad when I heard that this weekend. And you just start to realize, and I'm not diminishing the falling out we had, because it was deeply hurtful, and still is with me, and cost me friendships that people who don't even know what happened, because I could no longer just be in the presence of someone. And that it felt so insignificant. And that's not me saying, hey, it's all, hey, who gives a shit, man? No, I still give a shit. But I also recognize once again that sometimes things are so big, and I haven't reached out to the person yet, but I will be, just to express my condolences, because oddly enough, my uncle, who passed away a few months ago, was 4 when his mother passed away, and my mom was 9. And I think my mom has never quite dealt with it, because she could always lay that on my uncle and go, he lost his mother when he was 4. And I always say to her, I'm like, I know, mom, but you lost your mom when you were 9. That's not exactly like, yeah, you have more memories, but it's not like you had a full life in any way, or even a full adolescence with your mom. 9 years old is maybe not as bad as 4, but it's not great. And to hear that he has a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old. And I see, you know, my uncle, half his ashes are with his girlfriend of 40 years, and half his ashes are now buried with his mother. So that whole time, that his whole life, you know, he wanted to be reunited with the person he barely knew. And when I heard that, and I, about my friend, my former friend, and what his family, the rupture, the tragedy, the, you know, that it made me so sad, and it made my previous quarrel feel so insignificant, even though it wasn't insignificant, because there's pain that you just don't want anybody to endure. Genuinely, I don't give a fuck who it is. And this is like, this is not somebody I feel like, this isn't somebody who I feel deserves pain in any way, but like, no matter how deep the hurt I felt, it was just, it felt insignificant, because this is just, you know, I think of my uncle and how it defined his life in many ways, not having his mother. That shapes your world in a different way. That's not even being abandoned by your mother. That feels like God took your mother, or whatever, or fate, whatever you believe in. And that's so sad and so upsetting for him, for his kids, for their extended family. And I felt so bad. I'm going to reach out to him just to express my condolences, because I just, God, so fucking sad. And it's weird that the biggest tragedies in people that I've been connected to haven't even been COVID. I have a friend who lost his mother to COVID, a friend, but not like a deep lifelong connection. But, you know, my uncle didn't even pass away from COVID, but it was still shocking and startling the way it happened. And then to hear this through the grapevine really just felt like somebody punched me in the fucking gut really hard. And I feel so bad for him and his family. So this Thanksgiving, I guess everybody, you should be grateful. Try to be safe. I know this podcast started with me yelling about people who want the irony, right? Yelling about people trying to see their family. I didn't see my uncle for the last 6 months of his life. The last time I saw him, he was still alive, but he was sedated. So I didn't see him the last 6 months of his life. And knowing what I know now, would I have gone? I was going to go see him and socially distance. I was protecting, you know, because you didn't want shit raging through the subway system. I was going to go see him. And then he got taken to the hospital. I was planning on seeing him the weekend after he got taken to the hospital suddenly. Would I have changed anything? Yeah, I could say I would have changed it had I known he was dying, but nobody knows that shit. So not knowing it, I wouldn't have said, well, I talked to him on the phone. We do it safely. I don't want to be somebody who brings illness to my family. So it's a question. There's two ways to look at it. Do you want to risk your family? Do you want to risk someone else's family in this time? Or is it okay to Zoom and to share the love and communication and hope that you'll see them in 2021 in person and give them a big hug? I think that's the way to do it. And trust me, I understand, but let's not pretend like a lot of these people on the news who are like, I need to see my family. If you're wearing a MAGA hat and going, nobody's stopping me from seeing, that doesn't sound like somebody who's like, I miss my family and it's important to me. The people who really miss their family and that's why they're doing it, I don't think are on TV or giving quotes to newspapers going, you know, it's a hoax, nobody's going to stop me, freedom. I don't think those are the people who are like, I just need to see my family. I think that's a private thing, and I hope we all do the right thing, because you run a risk with older relatives that maybe they won't be around. But you also run a risk that you could be the cause of doom for your relatives or for someone else's relatives. And I think we all need to just, anybody listen to this, I hope you're playing it safe. I hope you show respect for your family and for other people's families if you play it safe. Because there is a lot of pain out there. There are people losing family members to COVID, to other things. And maybe you would love to see them one more time, but I don't think the lesson from the things I've said on this episode are risk it all to see them. I think it is to play the averages and say, play it safe, hope or pray that you have many years left and that you won't be the one causing harm to your family or to other people's families. I think that's the way to play it this holiday season. So I'm sorry. This episode, like a lot of them, Jesus Christ, I started out an angry libtard. I then ripped your favorite Disney Plus show, did some impressions, and then just a whole lot of sad talk. But maybe that's the holidays, right? COVID plus holidays equals depressing introspection. But if you're a prayer, pray. If you're a hoper, hope. If you're a secular humanist, maybe just take it out of your fucking Twitter bio. That's one thing. I'm going to be an equal opportunity offender here. Anybody who throws Christian in their bio, you can throw it in, but if I saw a woman who's a fan of mine and her Twitter bio said like Christian family fun, and I was like, okay, good. As long as you didn't say faith, family, freedom, we're okay. But you know, then you got the people who are like, what's your Twitter bio? Atheist. And you're like, that's your bot. Like, okay, that seems like an odd thing to sort of flex as well. But okay, whatever you want to do, as long as you're not afraid of burning in hell. But yeah, I've been doing a lot of praying this week. And God, you know, I really do like going to church. That really is, you talk about a safe space. I know this maybe seems, I'm human, guys. I have temptations. I have failures. I have wrath. I exhibit many of the seven deadly sins, if not all of them. But envy less than you'd expect, though. A lot of you probably think I show a lot of envy. I don't. That's really more wrath at injustice than it is envy. I don't envy less talented people than me. Oops, there was some pride. Oh, I'm going to watch Seven tonight. That's what I do on Sundays. I go to Mass and then watch Seven. That's my spiritual journey. Seven is such a gosh darn great film, though. My goodness, what a movie. If that movie came out today, all the Oscars, right? All the Oscars for Seven. Brad Pitt, Morgan Freeman, Kevin Spacey, if you could just get it out, pre-sex abuse stuff with Kevin Spacey allegations. Gwyneth Paltrow, I mean, David Fincher, just flexing, just letting Hollywood know a star had arrived. Oh, that movie. So I feel like that movie is vastly underrated. It deserves a lot more credit as a great film and not just like a cool, fun movie or darkly entertaining movie. But yeah, a lot of praying these days, but I do love church. It really is a serene space for me. You know, I feel no pressure. I usually leave Mass feeling very sad because I think it's the one of the few places, if not the only place in my life, where all guards are down. It's just me, my conscience, God, if you believe in him, just praying, thinking, thanking. And I don't know. I understand why people, but once again, I'm the guy who goes, oh, if they have to close the churches, I'll miss it. I'll just watch on YouTube. They live stream Mass and I'll say a couple prayers then. And it won't be the same. It feels better being in that community and in that big sacred space. But I'm not going to go, open up our churches. It's my right to die, freedom of worship. No. No, I'm going to be like, well, I look forward to church opening up again. I'm not going to turn into another battle against the libs, you know? And I think that's what everybody says. Things have gotten too political, this or that. But like, I have seen politics and people's political correctness, make a nuisance for my comedy. But this, I hate Democrats and political correctness as your like faith and overriding life structure is absolutely ridiculous, and it is far more damaging to this country. The hate of liberals or whatever, hate of Democrats, is the most damaging singular ethos in our society today. I genuinely believe that. I'm not saying you can't have good reasons for disagreeing with Democrats or political correctness or free speech issues. That you can have all valid concerns. But when your president is running a coup and you want to open up your church, partly because you want to worship and partly because you want to own the Dems and not have them telling you what to do. Let's put it this way. If Trump told you to wear a mask and that he had to close churches and you would be okay with it, then you got to be okay with it when the scientists say it too. Okay? And if you disagree because you think the scientists are part of the Democratic agenda, you are dangerous. You are dangerous because you are operating politics as a faith-based thing instead of a fact-based thing. So that's just my 95. That wasn't 2 cents. This episode was fucking 500 cents. But thank you for listening. It was long. It went everywhere. But thank you. I appreciate you listening. So hopefully before we got to the super depressing parts and thoughtful parts of this podcast, you went and bought a bunch of shit and purchased a bunch of things and subscribed to a bunch of things and left a bunch of reviews and gifted some albums for people. Whatever, whatever, whatever. Have a good week, folks. I appreciate you listening. Some food for thought. This was a banquet for thought. This wasn't just food for thought. Maybe you disagree with me. Maybe you agree with me. But hopefully it was a good listen. And hopefully you all have a safe, happy, well-fed Thanksgiving. Stay safe. Do the right thing. Do the right thing for everybody, not just for your family. Do the right thing for other people's families. Donate if you can. I've made some food bank donations already. I'm probably going to make some more this week. But, you know, let's try to make things better instead of worse. Okay? So lip sync sucks, and I will see you next Tuesday.